We are back. You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington. Joining me today, as always, it's Mr. Mike Giletto. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How's everybody doing?
Good. We're doing good. It's good to be back. It's been an interesting week, a little bit of up, a little bit of down, and we'll talk about that. But before we do that, we're gonna plug our Twitter, at YWT Podcast. We're always there. We're always hanging out. Mike's all over that.
Absolutely.
Producer Mike is at Mike_Giletto in addition to that. And Mike Sr. here is at Mike from S Jersey. In addition to those places, you can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, I think. I don't know. We're everywhere. SportsTalkPhilly.com, too. And, you know, there's the plugs. You know where to find us. Leave us a review on iTunes. I forgot to mention that. But, all right, let's just get into it. There was not many close games this week.
No, the wins were wins and the losses were losses. Or the loss.
So, in case anybody missed it, the week started off on Monday with a 3-0 win over the Detroit Red Wings. Really not much to say about that. You beat the Red Wings. Yeah, you played against an AHL
fairly
team.
Fairly uninspired game by the Flyers, to be honest. They really did not play all that well. Yeah, you went into the game saying, well, we got to get these 2 points, and they got them. So it's hard to, you know, be too upset about it, but they didn't play particularly well.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they outworked Detroit. They kind of just got by on talent alone here, and you just beat a team that's just not really good enough.
Right.
Kevin Hayes with a shorty, Matt Niskanen with the empty net. You know, it's really a 2-0 game in practice. Kevin Hayes continued to be absolutely stellar shorthanded in terms of creating chances, which he did a little bit against Washington on Saturday night as well. And we'll talk about that.
He's been everything you could have hoped for going into the season. Yes, he's still overpaid. And yes, it still was the only way to get him here. And yes, he was a great addition. And no, you can't bitch about the money.
Right. And yes, I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, he scores the insurance marker on Monday. You know, Brian Elliott makes 16 saves against a bad Detroit team and gets the shutout.
You know what? For his bad, as you know, or uninspired, I wouldn't say they played badly, more uninspired. They still only gave up 16 shots. So, you know, they did something right.
You just kind of smothered a bad Detroit team. And Detroit's at that point in the season where they're kind of floating. They know they're not playing for anything. They're kind of just trying to mail it in here and get out of the season alive and try to get traded in the offseason. But the Flyers took care of business there, 3-0. And honestly, there's really not a ton to say about that game. It's a team that thinks they're making the playoffs, beating up on a team that has a real shot at getting the first overall.
Yeah, I think it was their 10th loss in a row or something.
It was number nine. I think they had 8 going in. They only have like 38 points on the season, and we're going to touch on the playoff race later. And spoiler alert, we won't be talking about the Detroit Red Wings in that conversation. So after that, Flyers had off Tuesday, Wednesday, and they came home to the Wells Fargo Center, where they have been very good this season, where the New Jersey Devils promptly kicked their
teeth. That's the shocker part of it. If that was a Devils game on the road, it kind of fits into the rest of the season. Where
yeah, I could see the
down,
team coming
down,
out flat.
Right, down to the competition. Yeah. They've played so many good teams for so long. You know, your human nature, sometimes you just don't have that edge going into the game. You're a little lax. But it's at home. That was the most surprising part to me. They really, even if you look at their, what did they have before that game, 3 or 4 losses at home all season, regulation losses.
The Flyers have been very good at home this season.
I think they didn't lose at Tampa Bay at home 1-0.
That game was really tight.
And again, it's a home loss, but I can't say it was an uninspired. They didn't play an uninspired home game, really, if at all, in a very long time. So
yeah,
if
for
that
sure.
was a road game, okay, I don't accept it, but okay, it fits into the rest of the narrative. This one did not fit the season's narrative at all.
Well, no, and what happened is 13 seconds in, Blake Coleman puts one by Brian Elliott, and away we go.
And you saw, not only did they score 13 seconds into the game, but you saw 13 seconds into the game where the Flyers' heads were, because the play originated in the left corner of the defensive zone. It's a loose puck. Two players go for the puck, and Myers just gets out-willed for the puck. Who was the devil? I can't remember who it was, but just he leaned on him, just pushed him off the puck, took the puck, centering pass, boom, 13 seconds in, it's 1-0.
I believe it was Travis Zajac.
Yes, correct. Yes, it definitely was. And it was just a and to the credit of the commentators, they said it. He just wanted it more. Keith Jones said it. He said that there's a situation where Myers just didn't want the puck as much as Zajac did. And then from there, the game just continued that way the whole game.
Right. And I was going to say, and that's kind of the theme of the video or the theme of the game at that point. You allow this goal 13 seconds in. You're playing from behind from the jump at home. Your crowd's out of it. Most of the crowd hasn't even gotten into the seats yet by the time you give up that first one.
And I don't mean to imply that that goal set everything in motion. And if they don't give up that goal, the whole game would have gone differently. No, I'm just saying that.
No, but it's true.
That theme was there and it played out the rest of the game.
Yeah,
If Elliott makes a big save there, I think the game still continues that way, and I think they still lose.
You can't play what if, but I'm not willing to say for sure that the Flyers lose that game. This team flattened out very, very quickly.
Yeah, but I don't think it was because of the goal.
It doesn't help, though. I don't think it helped.
I think the goal was a result of their not being focused, ready to play, and in an intense mode, which they showed for 60 minutes.
Right. Well, and that theory plays itself out, especially when it came to starting, because the Devils also scored less than 2 minutes into the second period and then a minute 10 into the third period.
Yeah.
The Devils' first three goals of the game were all within the first 2 minutes of the period.
Yeah, every time the Flyers...
13 seconds into the first, a minute 38 into the second, a minute 10 into the third. Bang, 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 right off the opening
Every time they went into the locker room and said, okay, the second period's going to be different. Let's get out there and show them. Boom, give up a goal. Okay, we're losing 2-0 going into the third. All right, let's do our thing here and have a strong third period like we've done all season, and let's get back in this thing right out of the gate. Boom. Another goal.
Right, and then at that point, you're in the third, and you got to start pushing. Miles Wood scores 4.5 minutes in, and then just over 11 minutes in. And, the Devils win going away 5-0.
So, yes, I will concede the second goal and the third goal definitely took whatever wind in the sails the Flyers would have had, and that affected the rest of the game. But I don't believe one goal 13 seconds in said, okay, we're going to be flat all night. I don't think it was the first goal. I think they were just flat.
I will give Mackenzie Blackwood a ton of credit because he played really, really well. And the Flyers did generate 46 shots on goal.
I was just
going
to say, I would love to know who kept the stats that game. There is zero chance that team had 46 shots.
No.
The Flyers did not in any way, shape, or form have 46 shots that night.
This would be a good show to have Kevin on because I'm curious what he was counting in the building. I was probably somewhere in the 37-38 range, and I feel like a couple things got on. Got on the scoreboard.
I don't know if they attempted 46 shots.
Well, we saw them take a ton of shots, and we saw the same thing in the Detroit game, where you won 3-0, and then in this game you're playing from behind, and I think that's why you have so many shots, because after the Devils are up 3-0, they kind of take their foot off the gas pedal. And you see that the Flyers outshot the Devils 20-4 in the third period.
Right, no, I understand that. I'm just saying I don't think they had as many shots as the stats would suggest that they did.
No, I'm willing to agree that I think the scorekeeper at Wells Fargo was a little aggressive on Thursday night. But either way, I'm actually really, really impressed with how this team bounced back.
Absolutely,
because Thursday night there was a lot of frustration. Alain Vigneault was not very happy. He put on a little bit of a show in his post-game presser. He was supremely unhappy with the effort his team displayed and the execution that his team failed to display. And I got to give him credit. He turned it around because we talk about Saturday night's game. Saturday night, the Flyers go into Washington. No big deal, Washington. Just, the best team in the East.
Right.
And then you take care of business.
Yeah, the thing I really, really enjoy about Vigneault is even as a fan, as uninspired as I thought they were at home against the Devils, I said to myself, you know what? It's so far outside of what the season and trend has been. I consider that game an outlier. I'm going to leave it alone. I'm not going to freak out. And then they come out, play the real good game against Washington that we're about to get into. Vigneault doesn't do that. He doesn't give the players a pass. He doesn't say, yeah, this really isn't us. We'll get back at it tomorrow night. No, he just jumps in, and this is terrible.
One bad game. We were awful. After a couple of good ones. Yeah,
we were awful. We can't do this. And, you know, the whole, you know, there's no coaching softly where, you know, I love my guys, and yeah, we really didn't play well tonight, but we'll be back at it tomorrow night. No, he's like, this is unacceptable. This can't happen. And I love that.
This is garbage.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. He has no problem calling out players who, you know, in his mind aren't trying hard enough or aren't putting in the effort that they need to or aren't executing in a way that he knows they can.
And what's even better, and what's equally good about it is, you know, at least the way it's coming across, the way he's saying it in the press, you know he's not saying anything, and Kevin's touched on this, you know he's not saying anything or has said this. He's not saying anything that he hasn't already had the player face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball, telling him the same exact thing.
Yeah, and that's very, very clear that Alain Vigneault runs a transparent ship. Yep. Whatever he says to the media, he said it to the boys. If he says something about, you know, Michael Roffel's hustle in the second period, you know he talked to Michael Roffel about his hustle in the second period. And you don't have to worry that he's...
And as a player...
Running around telling stories, blah, blah, blah. You know he's a straight shooter.
And as a player, you have to respect that because, you know he's not using the media to try to get a message to you. He's brought you the message already loud and clear.
And on the other side, on the flip side, the best thing about Alain Vigneault is that he also has no problem praising guys in the press.
Absolutely. Yeah.
He has no problem talking about street. Scott Laughton played a really good game and, you know, won a lot of puck battles and was really good on the puck. He has no problem praising as well as criticizing in the media and using the media as basically forcing the players to be held accountable, but then also rewarding them when they prove that they deserve to be rewarded. Yeah,
absolutely. Two-way street, 100%. Now, while we're doing this whole Alain Vigneault love fest thing, let's not for a second suggest that everything a coach does, even though you like him, and I think it was a great change. You know where I'm coming from on that.
Please put Claude Drew back on the right-hand side on the power play.
Let's not pretend.
Please let him shoot the one-timer.
Let's not pretend everything that a coach does as admittedly he's having a terrific season as coach. Let's not pretend everything that he does is right.
Please put Claude Drew back on the one-timer.
And I hated the decision to play Ghost against New Jersey. I'm not going to say Ghost in, they won 5-0. Ghost out, they won 7-1. Ghost was the whole reason why all that happened. Everybody relax. That's not what I'm saying. But.
Well, let's take a step back here. We're going to get back into the Washington game in a minute. But, you know, you touched on Ghost here.
Yeah, what?
For those who may not know, Ghost played on Thursday night. How do you think he looked? Because I have my opinions.
I think he was as flat as the rest of the team. He looked like a guy who hadn't played in a bunch of games. If I'm going to give Vigneault a thought process credit, okay, it's New Jersey. It's his first game back. We should be okay. Let's let him get his feet wet.
It's a little bit of a training wheels game.
So in that way, you know, I'll say okay. But ultimately, the train's rolling. Why change the conductor? Why change the seating arrangements on the train? Let the train roll.
And I agree with that.
And again, I'm using hindsight, you know, knowing that they came out flat and lost 5-0. And again, not saying for a second they lost 5-0 because Ghost played. That's not what I'm saying.
No. But he did look poor.
But I didn't like the decision. Love Vigneault, love his season, didn't love the decision.
Well, and he's come out and said, so Ghost played Thursday night, looked pretty poor, and ended up not playing Saturday. There was a little report that came out on Saturday that Ghost appeared frustrated in practice, and I don't know if it's because he was told he wasn't playing or what the case was there. I don't know if more details have emerged, but that story came out that he was a little frustrated. He ended up not playing Saturday night. Robert Hagg subbed back into the lineup.
I think there could have been a few things at play there.
Alain Vigneault actually said in the statement where he announced that they should have considered a rehab stint for Ghost. They should have considered a conditioning stint and sending him to Lehigh Valley and get his feet back under him.
Okay. Well, I had a little protection for the player. I like that.
And I think that would have made a lot of sense. Yeah. Rather than playing against the Devils on Thursday and, you know, maybe Washington on Saturday, I would have much preferred he go down and play two games in three nights with Lehigh Valley and kind of get his feet under him and let him play Friday and Sunday, assuming they're playing 3-3. Right.
And I bet you Vigneault,
but either way, let him play a couple of games and let him get his legs back under him before he plays at the NHL.
And I bet you Vigneault really believed that. He wasn't just throwing shade for his player. He doesn't do that, which we just talked about. It was something that he honestly believed that to be the case, and he thought that would have benefited him. So
he sounded disappointed with himself for not taking care of Ghost like he should have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, absolutely. But again, I don't think he's doing it solely at the protection of Ghost. That's not the guy he's been here all year.
No, he feels bad that he feels let like he Ghost made a down. Mistake. Yes, he let Ghost down by not setting him up to succeed as well as he should have.
Right.
And not letting him recover as completely as he should be.
I also believe the size of Hagan, the size of Ghost, and the size of the Capitals had something to do with going back to that change.
I think that's entirely fair. And, you know, getting into this game, when that game did get out of hand, we saw it get physical.
Right.
We saw Nick Obey-Kubel drop the gloves. We saw a couple of pushing, shoving matches post-whistle, a couple of scrums.
You're going to mention his name and not mention his statistic? He had the Gordie Howe hat trick.
He did have the Gordie Howe hat trick.
Nick Obey-Kubel. The fight.
I have softened on Nick Obey-Kubel. I don't remember if I said it on the show, but I know privately I was pretty critical of how he played when he first came up. I thought he looked a little lost. I thought he looked a little step off.
I don't think your criticisms were unfair.
Right.
I just thought they were a little quick.
Yeah, for sure. And there's definitely an adjustment period because the NHL is faster than the AHL, and he's been in the AHL for a little bit. And
look, it took Lawton.
I will admit, it took Lawton three years to find
his role.
I will admit that I might have been a little quick to judge.
I wouldn't go that far either. Let's not say because of his good 20-game run, okay, this is going to be somebody we can count on. School's still way out on this guy. But his progression from first game to last game, you got to like where he is.
And over the last 5 or 10 games, he has looked like a competent NHL bottom six guy. I don't think that's unfair to say.
Look, he can be a terrific bottom 9 through 12 and be terrific. There's nothing wrong with that. You need those guys.
What I think he's going to be, I think he has the potential to be an upgraded, better Chris Vandevelde. I think he's got the potential again.
It's very short.
He was a poor 4C,
but
he was a very poor. He was a poor 4C, but a pretty solid penalty killer.
Yeah, and
I see Obey-Kubel kind of in that role, kind of in like a Zach Rinaldo role, but without the fighting.
If that makes sense, I know it was in the middle of a good run. I see a little bit more than that. I'm going to mention a guy that he reminds me of, and I'll tell you why, and it'll make more sense. And you
wait, did he play before or after 2000?
He played before 2000. You're going to know the name. You may not remember the style, but you're going to know the name. Bob Kelly.
Okay.
Bob Kelly, whose name was nicknamed the Hound. And when he hit the ice, he was a bowling ball. Bang, 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 bang. He was an energy guy. He hit this, hit that. You know, he played his 10, 15 minutes a game, and he just, he got the team going. Fight if you need to fight. But he wasn't, he had good hands, scored his 10 goals a year, whatever. A 9 through 12
Scott
guy
Lawton.
that every team who's good has to have. You know,
Scott Lawton.
When Vandevelde's your 9 through 12, your team's not that good. When Bob Kelly's,
right.
when Bob Kelly's your 9 through 12,
that.
You're winning the Stanley Cup. So,
well, I hope that proves to be the case. And again, like you said, it has been a fairly short
style.
Run. He had a fairly short run of being poor when he first got called up, and he's had a fairly short run of being okay since then.
I don't know that it was poor.
So the jury is definitely still out. He's definitely not.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right.
What he is.
I think you used the better word though when you started to describe him, that he looked lost. Now, I don't know that he was poor. I mean, the effort was there, all that stuff. He just looked a little lost.
He looked a little outclassed.
I think that was the right word that you touched on. And now he's figuring out his role. Okay, this is what I need to do in the NHL to be successful.
Yeah, he has settled into the role better than, for example, Vorobyev did last year.
Yeah. Dude, he completely turned the Boston game around.
Right. Oh, and we do also want to mention that Saturday night, Morgan Frost was called up. So Andy Andreoff was sent down. Morgan Frost was finally called back up. And I'll be honest, I didn't really notice him all that much.
It's tough to notice anybody in that, you know, specifically.
I think Alain Vigneault sheltered his minutes a little bit. He didn't do anything poor. I didn't see anything bad. But I just didn't really notice him too much.
And look, and when you're up 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, you know, and 7-1 ultimately, no specific moment in a game is really going to stand out to you other than that goal or two or three that gets you to that point. So, you know, there was never a moment where it was 2-1 where Frost made a good play to save a goal or made a bad play to give up a scoring chance that ends up in the net. So it was hard to, you know, it was hard for him to stand out positively or negatively in a 7-1 game. So we'll see what he does going forward.
Yeah, but I will say one person that did stand out in yesterday's game was El Capitan, Claude Giroux. Claude Giroux. Yeah. So listen.
I remember Claude. He's the guy that disappeared for the last five games.
Claude has had a little bit of a tough season.
I wouldn't say bad season though. I think that was a little rough. My jokes aside.
I didn't say bad.
I'm coming down on myself. The whole Claude who, you know. I know it's not been a stellar season for him, but he's not been bad. He's adjusting to what Vigneault wants. And again,
Did you see the stat when Claude Giroux passes to somebody for them to take a shot? Okay. Mm-hmm. When he tries to attempt to get a primary assist, the guy who's taking the shot is shooting 1.6%. That is absurdly low.
I was going to say, I don't know what the statistic means because I don't know what everybody else is.
Okay, so
It's not basketball where guys shoot 50%.
Top tier shooters shoot in like the 17 to 20% range. Solid players are in like the 10 to 15% range. Like average seasons are between 10 and 15%. Patrick Laine shoots like 19.4 or whatever because he's ridiculous. People that Claude is passing to are shooting at 1.6%.
Yeah, that's obviously not very good. This just right. in.
But that's also not his fault. For the most part, you know, you can argue that he's responsible for some of it if they're bad passes, whatever you want to say. But generally speaking,
Does that consider only when there's a shot on goal?
I honestly don't know where the stat comes from, but I saw the stat out there, and that's
You would think if the guy shoots wide, it doesn't count.
You would
it's
think.
Not a, it's not a, it's because it's not a shot.
Right. But that's
I think that's part and parcel sometime to Drew just takes some crazy chances. Even when the pass gets there, sometimes it's not in a prime shooting spot or it's not in a, you know, it's
no,
not,
I understand that.
Again, all of the down things that we can say about Claude, he still has not had a miserable year or a terrible year.
Right.
He's definitely done the things and adjusted his game to what Vigneault wants. Vigneault has
38 points.
He's not sat him on the bench. He's not ridden him in the media. He's not, he said we need more from him, and that's fine. But when you turn the puck over less and you take less chances, your points, like we talked about it with Jake, your points are going to come down. But the goals you give up are going to come down. Your plus minus is going to be better. So I'm not going to kill Giroux for not having 100 points when the team is winning. But they still need more from him, and it was good to see him get back. Hopefully, the sixth or seventh goal that he put in last night? Not his sixth, the team's sixth or seventh that he put in last night will get him going. I know we had two assists before that.
The reason I brought up the shooting percentage thing is because I think it's pretty reasonable to suggest that Claude Giroux should probably have 10 or 15 more points. Just roughly.
I'm not going to blame the teammates for his lack of scoring. That I'm not going to do.
No, but I'm saying there's a case that if he gets a couple of bounces, he has 10 extra points. And if he's sitting at 48 points in 55 games instead of 38 points in 55 games, we're a lot less unhappy with Claude Giroux's production this season.
In baseball, you play 26, 25 weeks, okay? If you get one, the difference between hitting 300 and 250 is 25 hits a season. If you get to Bull Durham, this, if you get one flare, one seeing eye single, one ground ball with eyes per week, you go from AAA to Major League star. I'm not going to, and you know, the guys who don't get that hit a week, they're the guys that don't, they're not good enough. It's not that they're not getting the bleeder, it's that they're not good enough. So if Claude
it's
doesn't
not an
if,
apples to, it's not an apples if to apples
Claude comparison, doesn't have
60 though.
Points, it's because he doesn't have 60 points. It's not because somebody's hockey. Shooting the puck wide or not doing what they're supposed to do. Look, he's also not getting the ice time he was getting.
Arguing that baseball and hockey are statistically comparable.
Not statistically comparable. I'm saying the statistics at the end.
Hockey is so much more luck-based.
Luck.
Hockey is so much more luck-based.
Luck is where the residue of design meet, but that's you make your own luck.
It is, though, but it is. It is luck-based. It literally is.
Luck can be the difference between 58 goals and 49 goals. It's not the difference between 25 goals and 50 goals. That's not luck.
No, I understand, but it's such a luck-based game that those little microscopic edge case bounces happen every game.
Yeah, but it's a percentages game. I agree with that. And the more often you're in the position for those percentages to go your way, the better your numbers.
Well,
he's clearly not. But again, I think it's by design.
But he is, though. That's the thing. It all comes back to that shooting percentage.
Well, you'd have to know how many passes he's made or completed in that situation this year compared to last year. I bet you he's completed a lot less passes because he's not attempting as many crazy passes because Vigneault doesn't want him to.
But at the same time, if people aren't finishing at the end, it doesn't matter what he does
who's
to get
not,
it there.
Who's not finishing this year that finished last year? Konechny's better.
Whole team. One goal here, two goals here, two goals here. Like it adds up.
Yeah, you're back to the bleeding eye single. And I don't give credence to that.
Let's circle back to this game. Let's circle all the way back around. The Flyers, Claude Giroux, played a great game.
Yeah.
Had 3 points in this game.
Two assists before the goal.
Two assists.
He's been playing with.
That goal, his 14th of the season, was his 250th career goal.
And
also his 800th career point.
Claude.
And after Senior just finished bashing you for 5 minutes, like to congratulate you here at You Would Think.
I didn't bash him. That's not what I did. Okay, and I came down on myself for the Claude Who thing. Like I said it was more joke than anything. Claude,
when
800
Claude
points.
Hears this clip,
Flyer.
He'll know which host is on his side.
I'm completely
he'll
on his side.
He'll know which host has
I'm completely
his
on
back.
His side, just like Vigneault. We just need more though, Claude. You're 30. You're
Claude,
32.
Listen.
You're not 38. You're not done yet.
Claude, listen. You know who your real friend is here on this podcast, and it's Kyle.
You've got your seat. Pretty much waiting for you in the Flyers Hall of Fame. You're going to get there. You're going to be a top 10 Flyer of all time, if not lower. So God bless you. It's been great watching you. We'll always have game 7 against Pittsburgh and Crosby. That memory will be forever remembered.
That was game 6.
Game 6. The deciding game. Whatever.
Yeah, we'll remember it forever if we can remember what game it was.
The deciding game. It was the game they won the series on.
Quick side note, this is going to be a tangent here, folks. Yes or no, if Claude retires at the end of this year, do you retire 21 or 28?
Well, I definitely don't retire 21, but
hey, listen, Peter Forsberg was great in a Flyers uniform.
If he retires this year?
If he retires at the end of the season, let's say the Flyers make the second round and lose, so he doesn't get a cup or anything. But let's say they win a round and then they bow out in the second. And then he retires at the end of the season.
He's right on the fence.
Of jersey retirement?
Right on the fence.
Okay. He's been the captain for almost a decade.
But of a team that's done absolutely nothing.
But he's the longest reigning captain in Flyers history.
For a team that has done nothing.
But he's the longest reigning captain in Flyers history. I didn't say it was a good thing. I just stated a fact.
Look, if you're a German Shepherd and you've been the baddest dog in the pound for 20 years and the biggest dog in the pound is a Chihuahua, you don't get any credit because there's no pit bulls there. But that was a terrible analogy.
That was an awful analogy. I don't know
awful.
Where you were
yeah,
going
that was
with
awful.
That
but anyway
especially just, with the dogs your son has.
True, but no, you don't get credit for being a 10-year captain, the longest tenured ever for the Flyers, but they haven't accomplished anything. They went to the finals one time and it was a great season they gave us, but
And that was before he was the captain, to be fair.
Yeah, whatever. It's still in that 10 years.
Richard wore the C for that.
Again, I think he's right there. Number one, he's not retiring at the end of this year.
Well,
but
no.
And I understand it's nothing to do with your question.
No, it's just a hypothetical.
I think he gets to 1,000, and I think his seat is reserved for the Flyer Hall of Fame. I think he's going to get there. He's definitely in the Flyer Hall of Fame, for sure. He gets to the 1,000-point mark, then I think you definitely see his jersey number retired, yeah.
I think he's probably pretty close to Hockey Hall of Fame.
He gets to the 1,000, it's almost, I would say, it's pretty much a given. I mean, 1,000's not quite what it used to be.
I think I can comfortably say that Claude Giroux is a Hall of Famer, but I would be willing to hear arguments to the contrary if he decided right now. Like, I'm not convinced enough to the point where I'm going to get righteous about it.
One in the next 3 or 4 years before he hangs him up, one nice real good cup run where they either get there or – if he gets there, if they get there and win it, he's a lock. He gets there and makes a nice run, doesn't quite finish it off, and they get to the finals, and he gets to the 1,000 points – I think it would be atrocious if he doesn't make it. Okay?
I agree.
If he just does the 1,000 and there is no run before he retires, I still think he gets there because 1,000 points is a lot of points.
That's a huge milestone in this league.
It's not quite, but it's almost a 3,000 hits in baseball. There's not a player in the Hall of – there's not a guy in baseball with 3,000 that's not in the Hall of Fame. And hockey, I think, is very similar. I don't think there's anybody with 1,000. Well, Pete Rose aside. Yeah, sorry.
Careful.
That doesn't belong in the whole thing.
We're not getting into that one. We are not getting into that one.
I was going to let it go by until you brought it up. But anyway, I don't think there's an NHL player with 1,000 points that isn't in the Hall of Fame. And if anything, it's harder to do. It's harder to do today than it used to be.
Right. I mean, in terms of guys that are eligible. There's guys who are still playing, but... I don't think there's anybody with 1,000 points who's not in.
So, again,
And he's at 800. Yeah. So he's got to put a couple more seasons together.
He's 32. He's not 35. So he should definitely get there.
Yeah, he should get it clean.
He'd have to fall off the rails, and the Flyers would have to basically say, "We're done with you. Go play somewhere else." And he goes somewhere else, and it doesn't work for him to miss.
Yeah, I would be really disappointed by that.
Yeah, so would I.
Claude's been here long enough that if he goes anywhere else, it's gonna feel like Joe Montana in a Chiefs jersey, or
I agree. But again, if
like even Ray Bourque in an Avalanche jersey, it still looks weird.
It did. As much as we understood it and what it was it was all about,
you get it,
and a guy that played that long, and I was kind of happy for him,
But it still looks really looked strange.
Exactly.
Chelios and a Red Wings, like, come on.
Yep. And to go to a team that was so stacked, it almost looked like, it wasn't like he went to Colorado and was responsible for them winning the cup. He was a small piece, and he got to hold the cup. God bless him. He had a great career.
Let's say theoretically that's happening to Claude this year. Let's say he's retiring, he's decided he's hanging it up, and we want to get him a cup. Okay. Man, he'd look really, really good on the left wing of Stamkos and Kucherov, or Point and Kucherov. Come on.
I don't know if he's fast enough to play with that team.
I think he can keep up with Stamkos and Kucherov. Because, they're both fast, but neither one of them is McDavid. Like, I don't know if Claude could keep up with
McDavid. Nobody's McDavid. Well, except
But I also think... But I also think that Claude would be the fastest winger McDavid ever played with, and they would do some special things together. That would be fun. But either way, Claude's our captain. We're not trading him.
I don't even want to consider him somewhere else. So
you're right.
Again, for what for my teasing about where's Waldo? For that joke aside, I love Giroux. I want him to be an all-time Flyer. I want his 1,000-point in a Flyer uniform. And I want to root for that. I don't want to root for somebody getting 700 goals in another uniform.
We talked about this a little bit off the air. One of the major storylines Saturday night was Alexander Ovechkin, because he is currently sitting at 698 career goals. The other night, he scored a natural hat trick in 6 minutes to win his team the game. You heard about that? They were behind, and he just decided that, I'm just going to win now. Scored 3 goals on 5 shots over the last 6 minutes, including an empty netter. He's got 14 goals in his last 7 games, something outrageous. Or I guess his last 8 games now.
I can't think of any player in sports history, let alone, well, except for Barry Bonds, who, you know, obviously you know the reason why for that. Who at this age, not only has he not plateaued and start the decline, you could argue he's starting to rev up the jet again, and he's on the incline.
Well, if you remember a couple years ago, I think he only, air quotes, only had like 42 goals or something that a couple years ago. And we started to hear the whispers of, is he done? Is he over the hill? Is he old? Is he too slow for today's NHL? And then since then, he's gone like 59, 60. Like,
he went faster. Or was going to go faster from 600 to 700. Then he went from 300 to 400, 400 to 500, and 500 to 600. How do you do that?
I don't know.
It's insane.
Alexander Ovechkin is an absolute monstrosity.
Him going from 600 to 700 as fast as he's done it or will do it has taken him from, wow, you know what? He's got a small chance to catch Gretzky to, wow, he's doing likely it. To catch Gretzky.
Yeah, he's doing it.
I'm not willing to say that yet, but he's definitely entered the likely range.
If I told you 5 years ago that somebody was challenging Gretzky, would you believe it?
No, absolutely. Again, because people, as they get to the age that Ovechkin's getting to, I'm not sure it's
slow down.
But you see the plane start to do the departure and the landing. This guy's revving it up, and the plane is getting higher. How does that happen at 34?
Man, your analogies are on point today. Well, first we had the dogs. Now we have the plane revving up.
This one was way.
Now we have the plane revving up.
Yeah,
I've never heard a plane rev, but I don't know about you.
You've never heard the jet of an engine rev.
Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, the Flyers held Ovi without a goal on Saturday night.
Despite many Flyer fans rooting to see the 700th goal. My son included.
First of all.
Flyer alumni included. Are you people? And then new this morning included. I want to choke every one of you.
Let me put this in a little context. Okay. You told me. You heard Keith Jones talking on the broadcast about he wants the Flyers to win, but wants to see Ovi score twice.
Morgani was right there as well. I wanted to choke these people.
Producer Mike apparently said something similar to you behind closed doors. I to you admitted this morning that once the Flyers were up 5-1, 6-1, 7-1, I thought to myself, and I said out loud, yeah, I'd be okay with Ovi scoring his 2 right now. Because how I looked at it is, Flyers are winning this game. You're up by 6 goals. It's in Washington, and I know the Caps are trying really, really hard to get Ovi these goals in Washington because they're about to go on a long road trip. So at that point, I'm okay with him scoring his 2 in the junk time of a 6-goal game that the Flyers are going to win going away. Let him celebrate his little moment. They're not going to win the game, so that'll kind of put a damper on it. Yeah, let him have it. It'll be cool to see the history.
Being okay with
now,
it.
Senior, you have a little bit of a different take
on
this.
The mentality of being okay with that, and I'm not talking about from a fan perspective. It's disgusting and from a fan perspective too, but from the player perspective, it's that's the mentality that you see of a player that's not willing to do what's necessary to win. In the back of their mind, there's that little, well, it's okay. No, it's not okay. If it's 17-0, I want to win 17-0. I don't want the guy to score any goals against my team. I certainly don't want him setting any records or any milestones against my team. You want to see him score the 700th goal and be really cool? Great. Tomorrow night against another team, I'll watch it and I'll enjoy it against somebody else. You know,
I want to see my team on the other side of that highlight reel.
Brady, Kobe going, yeah, we're up by 30. Go ahead. Let's see this guy score his 50th point tonight. It'd be pretty cool. No, they're coach. I'm not coming out of the game. I'm blocking the next shot. That's the mentality that wins championships.
Okay, but to be fair, I don't want my players thinking, yeah, Ovi
then you can't
the
think
one.
Like a fan that way.
I'm
no,
thinking.
You can't.
Sure,
no,
I can.
You got to be right.
Sure,
no,
I can. Because I'm watching this team.
No, see, that's fan.
Why do you watch sports?
Fan is fanatic.
Why do you watch sports?
Because I'm on the bench with my team.
Do you watch listen, do you watch sports to watch your team win, or do you watch sports to be entertained?
I watch sports to feed the same competitive desire I had when I was playing sports. Okay? And I live vicariously through the player. I am literally, as a fan, sitting on the bench. Okay? When I see Myers go into the corner and get pushed off the puck the other night in New Jersey, at home against New Jersey, I'm furious because I want to be on the bench next to him and grabbing him by the head going, what are you doing?
So you're not a fan of... Okay, so how do you
feel
about...
I appreciate the 700th goal when he gets it. And if there's a game that's on TV and Washington's playing, I'll tune in to see if he gets it. I'm a fan of the sport, not just the Flyers. I agree. I hear what you're saying. But my rooting interest is the Flyers, and I don't want to see anybody on another team do something good against them. I want the Flyers to stop, because if I'm on the bench, I'm trying to stop the team from scoring.
2 or 3 weeks ago, the Calgary Flames played the Ottawa Senators.
Right.
Okay, Wes McCauley was the ref. Opening faceoff, both Tkachuk brothers are on the ice. They're both playing the wing. Opening faceoff of the game, Wes McCauley waves out both centers and brings in the Tkachuk boys to take a faceoff against each other. It's a cute moment. How do you feel about that?
I'm not sure where we're going with that.
Is that fun? Is that entertaining?
It's irrelevant. It's a faceoff.
Okay, so the reason we watch the sport is to have fun, to see the fun stories. The Tkachuk brothers playing against each other is a story.
I would always say fun.
Alexander Ovechkin scoring 700 career goals and getting within, he's already within 200 of Gretzky. He's going to make it, by the way.
It's all fun.
That's a story. Even if it's against my team.
I didn't say it's not a story. I just don't want to see it against my team. And yes, I watch sports because it's fun, but the reason it's fun is because I'm competitive. It's feeding the same juices as trying to, you know, when the caveman was out in the wilderness hunting for food for his family. It's the same competitive desire.
Is there any difference between winning by one and winning by 50?
Yes. We demoralize the other team, so next time we play them, we know we're going to kick their butt.
That's not how that works. Flyers lost 5-0 to the Devils two nights ago.
You can't change your mentality from on situation. You play the game one way. You play it. You know, you play to win the game. You play every shift, every moment. It's how you get to where you want to be at the end of the season. The team that's holding the championship is the team that had the single-mindedness of focus to say, we're going to play this way all the time. You never take your foot off the gas, ever.
Last year's Stanley Cup champions were last in the league on January 3rd. They were a bad team, but
they weren't trying to be. They weren't trying to let the other team score their 700th goal, or not minding if they did, or we're okay with it.
What's the difference between the Flyers winning that game 7-1 and the Flyers winning that game 7-3 where Ovi scored 2 goals in the last 8 minutes?
Why would you want to see Ovi score 2 goals that don't matter?
Because it's cool,
but
man.
But it's not cool against my team. I'd rather him do it against somebody else. He's going to get 700 at some point.
I think it's extra cool when it's against my team. I would rather it be against my team in a game where my team is already going to win.
My head's
going to
explode, literally.
Let me clarify.
Literally, my head's going to explode.
Let me clarify. I'm not saying that I want him to score those goals in a 1-0 game where the Washington Capitals win the game.
But
let me be
equally clear. If the Flyers were up 17-0, I still don't want him to score.
Well, no, I wouldn't want him to score at that point because you preserve
it. It was 17-1. I still don't want him to score. I never want the other team to score, ever. Never, 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 never.
Man, that's no fun.
It's no fun to never score, the other team to never score. My head's going to explode. I got to stop saying that, but it's true. How could you want the other team at any point in time ever want the other team to score?
Because the sport...
Let me ask you a question. How is it less fun or less interesting or less cool, whatever phrase you want to use, to watch Ovechkin score 700 against the Lightning versus the Flyers? How is it more interesting or more fun that it happens against the Flyers? I don't get that. You're just more likely to see it if it happens against the Flyers.
It's just fun. Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to watch every minute of Capitals Lightning
Capitals
Vancouver.
You're being selfish.
Whatever.
You're being selfish.
Sure.
You're not allowed to be selfish.
Sure.
You're a fan. Fanatic.
That's like by definition selfish.
No. It's selfish for your team and your team only.
How did we get this far off the rails?
Because Flyer fans wanting Ovechkin to score against the Flyers is such a foreign concept to me. I can't. It blows my mind.
I watched this game that you and I both love, that we have done 60 episodes of this podcast about, because it's entertaining and it's fun. And
last night's game,
to me, one of the most entertaining stories this year is Ovi's chase of Gretzky, because he's done it in such bunches. He scores in such massive piles that he just passes 5-6 legends in a row.
Yep, and that's fantastic.
So watching him jump past Yzerman this year is crazy. He's jumped past some absolute legends this year. It's the biggest story in the sport. And yeah, I want him to cross this threshold against my team.
Because you're insane. And I'm thrilled with Ovi's career and all that, and I'm so proud of my team that they didn't give up a goal last night to him. I love it.
You know what? I'm going to say something controversial.
Again?
If the Flyers are playing the Capitals when Ovi's tied for the record, assuming it's the regular season, I don't care when that goal is scored. I don't care if that goal is scored in overtime. If it's scored against the Flyers, I'm okay with it. I'm fine with it.
A Flyer, if it creates a Flyer
loss. I'm okay with
a
Flyers loss. I don't care if it's with 1 second left in a one-goal game, so the Flyers don't even get a point out of that one.
You have to get your wallet out and get your Flyer fan card and throw it in the trash.
No, because history...
To hell with history.
History is rare.
To hell with history. You don't want the Flyers to lose a game?
No, come on. In the regular season, I'm fine with it. Fine with it. I am absolutely fine
with
it.
For anyone listening, do I really have to respond to this?
No, everybody
everybody sees on its face how terrible this is, right? You don't ever root for your team to lose. And I know you're not rooting for your team to lose. That's different.
I'm not rooting for my team to lose.
Look, I'll cheer that he broke the record another day if it happens to cause my team to lose. I'm not going to cheer that goal at that moment. It's not going to happen.
Oh, I am.
No, it's not.
I'm jumping up in the air. I'm all about it.
No.
And I'm
not if it caused, not if it caused
okay
my
that.
Team to lose. No.
You know what? That's a really, really good place to leave this off. Please, for the love of God, let us know what you think about this.
I bet you I win this poll 9-1.
Would you be okay or happy about Ovechkin breaking Gretzky's record against your team in a game where you need the points, but a game where you don't get points because of it or something along those lines?
So basically what you're saying, I don't mean to interrupt you there, but basically what you're saying is if you had a basketball poster in your room, you wanted to be the guy who was underneath the guy dunking the ball with the nuts in his face getting slammed over? That's the guy you wanted to be?
No!
But that's what you're saying.
Against my team,
that's what you're saying. If Ovechkin scores the record-breaking goal to pass Gretzky against the Flyers, that poster will have the Flyers in it forever. I don't want that goal scored against the Flyers. I want to watch that goal. I want to see that goal. I want to cheer that goal. I want to clap for Ovechkin because he broke an unbreakable record, and I'm thrilled for the guy because he's a good guy. But I don't want that to happen against the Flyers. I don't want to see that picture etched in stone forever to be against the Flyers. I'm a Flyer fan.
Who did Wilt Chamberlain score 100 points against in Hershey, Pennsylvania?
I have no idea. It was a totally different time. There is no video of it.
Okay, it was the New York Knicks.
Okay. Yeah,
does anybody hold that against the New York Knicks franchise?
No, but if it was played at the right time, you would know it was the Knicks. Everybody would know it was the Knicks because you would see the 100 point getting scored over, you know, whatever Nick it was getting slammed on, and the Knicks would be forever remembered as a team that gave up 100 points.
Whatever.
I could tell you who Kobe scored 60 against his last game.
Let us know what you think about this issue on Twitter. You can do it at YWT Podcast. Okay, you can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Sports Talk Philly, all that stuff. You know where Kevin's at on Twitter. You know where Mike's at on Twitter. You know where the other Mike's at on Twitter. You know where the show's at. Let us know what you think, because I'm really, really curious to see how this divides. We're going to make Mike put a poll up, and that's going to be on our Twitter for the week. And we'll talk about it next week. Are you okay with Ovi setting the record against your team? And I think that's a good place to leave it.
Sounds good.
Anything else on the way out here, senior?
No, that's it.
Well, until then, we didn't even talk about the upcoming week for the Flyers. I'm going to, real quick, Flyers have Florida on Monday, the Islanders on Tuesday on the island, then Florida on Thursday, Florida on Saturday. So the boys go to Florida this week. Three games on the road. We'll see how it goes.
I do know you were on our way out here, but I did. There is something I did want to mention, and the look ahead.
Go for
it. Look ahead reminded me. I looked at their schedule, the past schedule, which has been brutal, and I looked at their upcoming schedule, and I'm like, man, there's really not an easy game. It looks like, I guess because of your award 3 points in every NHL game now, every team's record looks good.
Yeah.
I think the Flyers, I think it's good that the most teams on their schedule are teams that they're either looking up at or across from, because they play better.
Every game matters.
And they play better when they have skin in the game. They clearly play better with skin in the game. So I'm not threatened by the schedule anymore. I'm intrigued by it, and it makes me feel better.
Yeah, and we have Florida is absolutely breathing down the Flyers' neck for that in that wild card jockeying.
Which, as of this morning, Flyers, I think we're actually out of.
The Flyers are currently out, but in a virtual tie with Carolina. Right. They have a tiebreaker win. But either way, things are very, very tight. The Flyers are 2 points out of third place in the division, but they're currently sitting outside the wild card.
Crazy.
So there's a lot going on. The Flyers are the eighth best team in the NHL, and they're not in the playoffs.
That's right. Nothing an 8-1-1 run can't fix.
Exactly. And we'll see how that shakes out this week. Two huge, huge, huge games against the Florida Panthers. You really need 3 out of 4 points there. You really want to finish all your games this week in regulation if you can, because every point matters this time of the season. Trade deadline's just a couple weeks away. We'll be talking about that a lot next week. And until then, we're going to get out of here, and we'll see you next time.